Today's presenter is John Kirkwood. John Kirkwood is a senior software engineer providing technical customer support for WebSphere Data Interchange and WebSphere Partner Gateway. He has assisted hundreds of customers worldwide with installing and implementing WebSphere Data Interchange. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to John.
Thank you, Elijah. Yeah, I'd like to welcome everyone to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange for installing WDI version 3.3. I will be covering only the ZOS platform, so I will not be covering AIX specifics or Windows specifics. If we can go to slide 2. What I'll cover today, I'll just go over quickly the software requirements and the basic install steps for everyone, whether you're new or an existing customer. Then I'll discuss migration considerations for those who have version 3.1 or version 3.2. I'll also, for those same customers, I would go over the operational changes so you're aware of anything that's changed between the releases. There are some important changes that you need to be aware of. There's also new features that require quite a bit of difference in how you've been, if you've installed WDI before. The Java piece here is going to be a little bit different, so the error notification setup, I'll cover some of that. And also, optionally, there's CICS, and I will give some considerations for that. Next slide. To start with, the software requirements, of course, you need ZOS and version 1.6 or later. Of course, you need DB2 for ZOS, version 7 or later. We've tested on version 7 and on version 8. The SMPE is, of course, necessary for ZOS products. And basically what you need is an SMPE level that supports call lives. And in addition, you need XML Toolkit for ZOS, the latest release, which is version 1.9. And that's needed for either the data transformation, you know, under batch or CICS. CICS that is not necessary for CICS, but it's needed for batch and for submitting server commands from WDI client version 3.3, and we'll cover that later. As far as the PC is concerned, you need that for WDI client, of course, and the platform here is Windows 2000 or Windows XP. You'll need DB2 Connect version 8.2, as that's what we've been testing with. And we, of course, you need your software required to connect. Next slide. Some optional software would be if you want to do online type translations or transformations, such as for continuous receive for MQ, those kinds of things. You would need CICS in that case. And optionally, you can use WebSphere MQ, WMQ for ZOS. Version 5.3 or later. We also require Java, the IBM SDK for ZOS, Java 2, version 1.4. An important factor here is you need to have at least a certain minimum service level 6. And this is used by the WDI Common Event Handler. That's also known as email alerts, if you've heard of that already. And you also need it for XML transformation under CICS. Next slide. Well, the first thing you're going to want to do is get the install guide, of course. So you go to that link I provided in the presentation. And in the beginning of the guide, you'll find a series of tables. Table 5 is for new customers. And again, these tables are designed to be like checklists. So you can copy the page and then just use it as a checklist to knock off the steps as you go through them. And table 5 is for new customers. Table 6 is for existing version 3.1 or 3.2 customers, so you can migrate all your data. And table 7 is for CICS, which, of course, is optional. Next slide. The system programmers are going to need to do this part. The steps 1 through 10 of the installation cover all the SMPE functions. The key point here, or the thing that we've noticed in level 2 support, what gets missed sometimes are the call lives. So I'm pointing that out really clearly here, that you need to pay close attention to call lives and the DD defs associated with them. We don't do any updates to any other programs besides WDI. We simply use these call lives to resolve external references to all of the other products like DB2, WMQ, CICS, and so on. And you'll find certain library names. It's basically the same name that was provided for those products. And so they should be familiar if you have the product. And just be sure to use, you know, if you have the product, make sure you enter the correct load live, you know, for the specific product. That way we'll be able to resolve all the external references and make calls to these other products without problem. If you don't have the optional software, then you need to replace, you know, the library name that we provided with the stub library, the SEDI stub data set. What that'll do is it'll allow us to insert a dummy module into the program, so when the link edit occurs, it won't fail. So that's important as well if you don't have the software. Now, of course, we're going to allocate distribution and target libraries as part of this, and then do, you know, an update, I'm sorry, and then update all of the, you know, do the UCLN to do all of the pointing to all the DDDEFs, and then we're going to do the receive, apply, and accept, which are your basic SMPE commands, and then you would apply any cumulative maintenance you receive with the package. Next slide, slide 7. Step 11, this is kind of where we break from the system programming kind of steps, which was 1 through 10, to step 11, which is going to be very specific to DB2, so this is going to be a DBA that's going to be performing these actions. The key points here are that we have a new high-level qualifier, and you're going to want to create a TSO ID for that high-level qualifier. As provided, it's EDI ENU33. It needs to have all of the authorities to be able to do the creates of the tables and the indexes, et cetera, and to do the binding. And then when you do the, before you do the creates, you need to make sure to do the set current SQL ID to that ID. And it also needs to be the same as the high-level qualifier for the tables. And that's an important point. So if you have questions, bring them up later. But you are allowed to use a different value. You don't have to use EDI ENU33. You can change it to your own value. But if you do, just make sure the TSO ID that you're doing a set current SQL ID to matches the high-level qualifier for the tables. That's a key point. If you don't do that, you'll end up getting errors during the bind. We won't be able to resolve columns. You know, it'll say column not found, that kind of thing. The other point I'd mention here is that we have we created a new database. So this, you know, this is all done so that it can coexist in the same subsystem because everything's differently named. So you have, you can use EDI DB33E or your own choosing. But the key point there is we are going to be using Unicode now with 3.3. We did not do that with 3.2 or 3.1. It requires code page conversion for ZOS. And if you need help with that, see the DB2 installation guide. There's a section on customizing support for Unicode. Slide 8, please. If you're migrating from a previous release, it's still related to DB2. Just be aware that the 3.2 or 3.1 system needs to be executable throughout the duration of this migration. So you can't shut it down and just read tables to do the migration. You actually need to invoke the WDI utility on your previous release to perform the rest of this installation. And if you're installing in the same subsystem, I mentioned this just a minute ago, you've got to make sure to use a different SQL ID with matching high-level qualifier. And it just as provided, it's EDI ENU32 for 3.2, and it's EDI ENU33 for 3.3. And I failed to mention here, it should say also EDI ENU31 for 3.1. Version 3.2 customers have a specific PTF level you do need to be at before doing the migration. This is needed due to some database changes that were put in support for business ID functionality. I give you the date there, which is January 10th. So please make sure you have that PTF applied before doing the migration. Slide 9, please. This is still related to DB2, step 11, the long step, as you see. There's some sub-bullets, you know, as part of this step. I didn't point them all out specifically, but now these I'm pointing out in particular because they do enable new features of version 3.3 that did not exist on the previous releases. Basically, what they're in support of are for server command submission from the client. You know, that's where you can actually invoke perform commands from the Windows-based client. use the stored procedures to do that. And then also it supports the document store, which is the replacement for the transaction store. So you can do processing like translation, transformation, and sending out to the network. You know, the things that you might have been used to with the previous green screen with the transaction store. Specifically, Bullet 4 configures the DB2 stored procedures to support these functions. It does use a workload manager address space to do this. You will need to have an OMBS external link for a WDI command script interpreter. If you don't need these features, you know, these the submitting of perform commands from this client or the document store on, you know, issuing commands, that is, to run the translation, then you can, you know, not create these procedures and not run the bind. And, you know, then you'll still have your base functionality that you were used to on version 3.2 or 3.1. Next slide, please. Slide 10, this is the rest of the DB2 activity, steps 12 through 15. These are pretty straightforward. You got step 12 and step 13 do load and run stats using the main DB2 DSMU proc procedure. Step 14 does the binding of the static plan, which is EDI ENU33, and we use IKJ EFT01 utility to do the bind. And the name of the plan is given here, EDI ENU33. Realize it also has, in that same job step, it includes package bind for the DB2 stored procedure I mentioned before. If you're not going to use that function, you can remove it. And just be aware, if you remove this and you decide to use the function later, you've got to come back and do this stuff. Step 15, obviously, we're going to do the grant to give everyone the authority they need. Next slide, please. Okay, step 16 is runs the import utility on WDI 3.3 to load the default data. This basically runs the main utility program, EDI FFUT, which we're all familiar with. And a successful completion of this job basically verifies that WDI 3.3 was installed correctly. It's basically running the batch process, so it's kind of inherently verifying the installation here. And then we've got things that are actually imported would be sample data transformation and functional acknowledgement maps, some setup profiles in support of that, and there's various other little things that are imported as well. It does not migrate data from the previous release, not yet anyway. And then once you're done with this step, you're basically now in a state of WDI being a brand new installation as if you did not have the previous release. So you would be able, I mean, even if you are migrating, you could start to run the product if you want, move single maps over if you wanted to from version 3.2. That would be up to you. But if you're migrating, then you're going to want to go to the next slide, slide 12. This is where you're going to migrate all of the user-customized data, such as EDI standards, data formats, maps, control strings, XML, profiles, code lists, and translation tables, all the things that the user might have manually set up in support of the product and its translation and transformation. It requires batch access to your previous release. I'm keep pointing that out just to make sure you keep it operational during this migration. And it, step 17 builds a control file that is used on the subsequent step 18. And it just builds a control file that lists all of the objects that we do need to export from your previous release. You would use EDIJ XPAD for version 3.2 and version 3.3 using DB2. Or if you were coming from 3.1 using VSAM, you would use EDIJ XPAV. Step 18, I would call this kind of the big step, if you're migrating anyway. This is a job that does all of the exporting of the data from your previous release, and then it imports it step by step into the new release, 3.3. And this step takes some time to just make sure everything runs correctly. Realize if you're coming from 3.1, you're going to be going through a map conversion type process. The maps are going to be totally converted from a host-based type format that you're used to on the green screen for 3.1 and converting them into what I would call a 3.2 or 3.3 format. Those coming from 3.2, there is no conversion being done, which is, I think, some good news. You've already been through that pain, you know, before for getting to 3.2, so it should be a lot simpler for you to migrate when you're coming from 3.2. Next slide. Step 19, verifying the installation. As I said before, step 16 already inherently did this, just because we ran the basic EDI-FFUT program. So we don't really have a specific step for that. But the extra things you would want to do, which are mentioned also in the install guide, is just to sign on to the WDI client using, of course, DB2 Connect, and just kind of go through all of the objects. And if you're migrating, of course, you're going to want to open up objects that you migrated from your previous release, your maps. A good thing to do would be to, you know, open up a map, make sure you can open up all the segments and elements, that kind of thing. I think a lot of that is pretty obvious to folks. Next slide, please. Step 20 of the installation guide covers operational changes. Again, this is just for prior release customers. The main point would be the administrator's menu, which would be the TSOC list, and the CICS EDIA transaction is no longer available with 3.3. There's no more green screen interface, in other words. That means no more need for GDDM. Also means that all of the functions that you were used to, if you were still using it anyway, are available in the WDI client 3.3. You'll also just be aware event logging, which you might have been used to using on the host on the green screen, is now available under the view menu on the client. And also be aware of the transaction store. This is probably the single biggest change as far as what operationally it looked like on 3.2 compared to what it now looks like on 3.3. The transaction store is replaced by what we call now the document store. Of course, it supports similar features as the transaction store, but in addition, it also captures information and images for data transformation in all three formats, the EDI, XML, and ADF, or data formats, in other words. The administrator menu functions for translating, enveloping, and networking are enabled on version 3.3 of the client via the stored procedure in step 11. And I strongly recommend familiarize yourself with WDI client version 3.3 before you actually cut over into production. Slide 15, please. Continuing with the operational changes, we've got the data transformation maps. If you are using the service segment validation or the functional acknowledgement maps that we ship, you'll just notice we had to change the beginning character from a dollar sign to an ampersand. That was needed in support of Unicode. In general, some other things to be aware of, JCL changes. Just, you know, realize this is probably obvious, but you're going to have to change your middle qualifier in your JCL to version 3.3. You're going to need to change your plan name, of course, point to the new toolkit version. And if you're coming from 3.1, the changes are quite more significant. So there's another, you know, you have an extra section in the install guide that it talks about. You've got API control block changes. And if you're coming from vSAM, you're better off starting over with in recreating your JCL using the sample that I mentioned there, which is EDI util D. Next slide, please. Okay, migrating operational data. This is basically this is kind of different from how we did it on 3.2. We just kind of did it as part of the in-stream. As part of the in-stream installation steps, we've kind of broken it out and provided it under an appendix, so it's kind of like you don't have to migrate it all right away. You actually can just do the maps and all the customization if you want first, and then migrate all of the transaction store, management reporting, and SAP status data from 3.2 when it's convenient or when you're really more ready for the cutover. There's no support for migrating from version 3.1, so you cannot move your transaction store, management reporting, SAP data from 3.1 into 3.3. There's just too many database changes between there. And speaking of database changes, this does require for 3.2 customers, where this is available, you do need a certain PTF level, Now, in this case, this PTF is very old. It's several years old, so I would expect most people have this applied already. And Appendix B goes through all of the steps, and it's pretty much just a cookbook. You can combine the plan for the unload of all the data above. You're going to do the granting for permission on the plan. Then you're going to actually unload the data. Then you're going to bind another plan for load processing, grant permissions on that plan for load, and then, of course, load the data. And the you know, these are all using WDI-provided programs, not DB2-based procedures. And they are designed to be rerun, so it will replace all the existing records. So you could do this over and over again, you know, until it comes time to cut over, then do it for the last time, and everything will be replaced. Slide 17, please. Yeah, something new with 3.3 is the Java API support. This has many names because it supports different things, but basically it's a new Java interface that we have for batch processing and in CICS. But it's also known as a common event handler or error notification or email error notification, if you want to call it that. This, you know, it enables a new Java API feature to send email alerts. It uses the USS part of ZOS, which is Unix System Services. And from ISPF, you would invoke those services by iShell for menu-driven interface or OMDS for a Unix-like interface. It does require files to be created under your HFS, the hierarchical file system. It does require a user with an OMDS segment. Again, I mentioned earlier that you need that to define the external link when it comes to doing the remote commands. And we have also a need for a specific level of Java, as I've mentioned earlier. Slide 18. WDI does provide some new JAR files. EDICEVH.JAR are for the common event handling for the email alerts. And then we've got EDICEVHSample.JAR, which is for sample email notification event handler. And we've got some configuration files that you need to customize as part of the installation. env.profile for your runtime environment variables for Java. wdi.properties, this is where you're going to define the specific things you want WDI to do. In other words, do you want it to call an SMTP program, or do you want it just to go to a dummy program? I mean, we'll talk about this in a little bit, too. And you just need to customize it for your desired interface. Slide 19. As part of the installation process, step 22, there is a JCL job stream, EDIJCEH, which you need to customize and set up. And it basically just sends a hard-coded string to an address that you define in WDI.properties. And for this particular round of the test, it's just going to go to the dummy event handler, which means it's not going to be sent out to email, but it will still test out the Java JAR files, make sure the things are in place. And you would just check as part of verification that the standard ERRL and standard OUTL CDs either show, you know, you want to see the successful message, of course, but if it fails, you will see error messages in those data sets. And lastly, for installing the Java API support, the last bullet enables WDI email notification. It's optional. It depends on whether you want to use email notification or not. The SMPT email server, URL, and IP address, and email account ID information all go inside of this WDI.properties file, and then basically you'll be sending that dummy text string to the SMPT server, you know, to go off in an email as part of the verification. Next slide, please. Okay, now we're moving on to Chapter 3, which is optional for those using WDI for CICS. We support version 2.3 or higher. Enabling language environments in CICS is a must. You've got to follow the instructions there. We make references in the install guide to other products like LE to help you with that installation if you don't already have it enabled. You've got to enable C++ in CICS. That's been a common myths by customers. Just be sure if you are installing in CICS, you've got to do the C++ enablement. And we point you to some other documentation if you need help with that. And just realize for these products, there are CSD, that's your RDO in other words for CICS, DFHRPL, and IO stream considerations. And again, we point you to some other documentation if you need help. Slide 21. For XML translations and our error notification, the Java SDK 1.4 is required. For XML, you don't need to install the XML toolkit because we use the one that's embedded within Java. So that version 1.9 XML toolkit requirement I mentioned early on is just for batch. It is not for CICS. You don't need it because it's already embedded in the Java. So if you're really just a pure CICS environment, you really don't necessarily even need the toolkit unless you're going to be using the remote commands or, document store type translation or transformation processing, in which case you would need the toolkit. Because that does run through, it actually runs through the WLM, which is part of the batch process. For kind of just an in general, it's a lot of cookbook stuff here, but step 23 through 37, you just define all the various elements to CICS, just some key notes here. Don't use your pre-existing WDI definitions. A lot has changed, so you don't want to, just copy your CSD, and then just, you want to delete or add a new group, RDO group, 4.3.3, and make sure that's put into the CICS region properly. If you use the previous definitions, you're going to be missing a lot of things, and you're going to run into all kinds of strange problems. So I highly suggest you just start over and create a new group for 3.3, RDO group, and then add that group to your list. Step 34, again, it's optional unless you're using XML transformation under CICS, and of course you need to run step 34. Step 35, this is another optional step depending on whether you're going to be using error notification. And we just realize when you're doing step 35, if you've enabled XML support, you've already done some of that activity already, such as setting up the home directory. I think it'll be relatively clear when you get to the actual installation process. Next slide, please. Kind of in summary here, just wrapping up, I'll just point to some other resources that we have available. You've got the Developer Works link that you can see in the first bullet here. And you can learn about other webcasts and conferences and events. There's a link for that. And there's a Global WebSphere user group community that you can access. And we also have something that's growing quickly, which is the IBM Education Assistant. You would want to access that link if you want to learn more about other products that have actual demos and tutorials. I think that's a very useful link. You can use the ESR tool for submitting problems electronically, although for ZOS customers, I think a better approach here is ETR, which are electronic tracking records. I think most of our ZOS customers know what that is, so just be sure you're going to be using that instead of ESR. And lastly, if you want to sign up for you can get specific to WDI, specific to just other WebSphere products, non-WebSphere like Rational, DB2, whatever products you like, you can sign up to get my support emails at this link, and that's kind of nice. It'll tell you about all the stuff that's going on, like whether new CSDs are being put out, new fix packs, new technical papers that we write. Level 2, we've been investing a lot of time lately on writing what we call tech notes, and which are just FAQs for existing customer problems that we've run into, and hopefully help you solve problems on your own. Slide 23, I think that's in the question and answer.
And we'll take our first question from David Richardson.
Yes, I have two questions, basically, if I can. The first one is, I noticed on page 20 it indicated that you could, the file had to be an HSF. Can it also be a ZSF?
For
a good question, David. I don't really know the answer to that.
Okay. Next question, because we're in the process of thinking of going to 1.9 and converting all of our files to ZSF is the reason for the question.
I think the key point there is going to be, does Java support it?
Okay, and I don't know the answer to that.
But that's what I would kind of start with, because it's pretty much going to be Java that's accessing the files. Right?
Okay.
So,
I can find that out.
And I think that's going to be your key point, yeah.
Okay. Next question is, on the client with 3.3, will it replace a 3.2 client, or will I end up with two different pieces of software on the client?
Oh, no, you would get rid of 3.2.
Okay, so it's going to replace 3.2.
Yeah, okay. If you close down 3.2, it's no longer needed. You would just use 3.3.
Okay, so I can...
You have to use 3.3, actually, for a 3.3 database.
Right, but I was worried about some of the same people that do their testing or do production work will be doing it in 3.2 and 3.3. So if I understand you, it's going to replace my 3.2 system, so therefore they better have another laptop or something sitting around. That's just a 3.2.
Well, they can coexist. I mean,
that's my question.
I have 3.2 and 3.3.
Okay, so it depends on the directory and everything that you set it in.
Exactly, and it's even by default, it sets it up to different drives.
Oh, then we're going to be great.
Yeah, it'll be fine that way. I guess you didn't realize also, if you tried to access your 3.3 database from 3.2, it won't let you. So you won't be able to corrupt anything either.
Good.
Okay.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1. We'll now take our next question from Mr. Steve Dickens.
Hi, John.
Hi, Steve.
I got a question. When I installed our 3.3 ZOS system, we skipped over step 11, which is the DB2 workload manager, and the step 22, which is the Java APIs. Now we want to go back and start thinking about how we're going to implement them. And two questions. Number one, are they directly related to one another? And two, from a level of difficulty, I mean, how much work do I have?
Well, it's going to depend. Level of difficulty, it's heavy Java, which even from my experience, it's less. I mean, I'll be honest. I have more experience in basic C++. Applications, which was what WDI was plainly before. So the Java is going to be new, and that's if you're not used to Unix, the commands in OMVS are going to be new, to be able to negotiate around in those environments, it's going to take a little time. Now, I'm not saying it's really difficult. I mean, you just need a basic set, I think, of commands being a user, but if you're administering the product, you're going to need a little more skill and more authority, of course. Now, I guess we're talking about step 11. It's not the whole step you're skipping. It's just the sub-bullets 4 and 5, right?
Yeah, regarding the workload manager.
Yeah, I talked about that on slide 9. Yeah, the workload manager, that's going to take a little skill. I mean, again, that's something a DBA should do for you, typically. If you're not a DBA, I don't think you should be expected to understand the workload manager environment.